The session is being recorded, and if you go, we'll start the recordings. We can now start the session. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, everyone, and welcome to the Joint Applicant Support Final Report webinar. Today's call will be 90 minutes and will be recorded. Recording will be made available later. There will be a Q&A at the end of the session. All lines will be muted until the end. Only the speaker's lines will be open. Please say your name before you speak at the end. The final report is not yet available in other languages. It's been translated and will be available soon or prior to the Dakar meeting at the end of October. In Dakar, we will have another session similar to this one with remote participation for those unable to participate today. Information about the Dakar session will be available soon at the ICANN meeting site.
Please slow down, Paula.
Okay, thank you.
Too far.
Yeah, the ICANN meeting site will be accessed through the homepage, ICANN's homepage, which is ICANN.org. Representing the Jazz Working Group today, we have Carlton Samuels and Rafiq Demek. Both are co-chairs. Carlton is a NOMCOM appointee and rapporteur to ALEC from 2001 to 2013. It's also a member of LACRALO. Rafiq is a GNSO liaison, GNSO
Keith
counselor,
Drizek.
And
Join.
Also NCSG member. The speakers are Avri Doria. Avri is a member of the NCSG in the GNSO and a member of At Large. She was involved at the Jazz Working Group as co-chair at the beginning when we had the final, milestone report. Ellen Greenberg is ALEC liaison to the GNSO and former ALEC member. He is an independent consultant related to the ICT in developing countries. And now it's on to you, the co-chairs. Thank you.
If I may, please just remember to speak slowly. We have interpretation in French and Spanish. Thank you.
Good morning, good evening, good night, everybody. Welcome to this webinar. It's great to have you here. We're going to just tell you very quickly what it is we're about to do here. Most of you would have known that the background to this began a couple of years ago. In 2008, there was a proposal from the IG Internet Governance Forum meeting that suggested I can make some special arrangement for fee reduction for GTLD applicants from countries that are classified as least developed by the UN. In the Nairobi ICANN meeting, Board Resolution 20 pretty much accepted the idea by resolving that ICANN should move quickly to develop a sustainable approach to providing support for applicants requiring assistance in applying for and operating new GTLDs. And by the 1st of April, there was a resolution to develop a joint SOAC working group to deal with the issue. And by the end of the month of April, the working group has been formed. And since that time, this work group has been meeting twice weekly on Tuesdays and Fridays to develop some information so that we can put some legs onto the board resolution in keeping with the work group's charter. We have now come to the end of the road with a report, and this webinar is intended to to provide the community with the information that we have gleaned over these many years. I want to thank all of you for showing up. I want to thank the members of the working group, especially, who have worked very hard and diligently to get to this place. My colleagues are here to provide you information and to answer any questions that you might have in the best way we can, given current arrangement. Thank you all for being here. I'll pass it over to my co-chair.
Rafiq?
Yes?
Rafiq?
Rafiq, is there anything that you'd like to say at the beginning of the webinar?
This line is muted.
Okay, so maybe we can have Ellen and Avery starting the presentation. Ellen, could you please start? Sorry, Gisela here. Rafiq's line is muted. If you would like to him to speak, we are just unmuting him. Okay. Rafiq?
Yes?
Go ahead. You're on the floor.
Okay, thank you. So I will do this quickly. Thank you for everybody for joining this webinar today. So I will try to speak quickly about the ongoing process in order to approve this recommendation and to be implemented in time for the beginning of the new GTLD program. So the working group already sent the final report to its sharding organization. So we have a motion submitted to the GNSO Council, which will take a decision this week during the conf call, and also the ALAC will do so later. So we hope that the board will take a decision and to consider those recommendation and the implementation plan, which should be developed by the ICANN staff. So those decisions should be done during the Dakar meeting in order to make it ready for in January when the new GTLD program will start. We will also have a special session meeting in Dakar in order to present this recommendation, hopefully for the African community, which should be present there. Now we should go to the presentation, which will be done by, for the first part, by Alan, and then in the second part for Avery. I think there are enough known in the ICANN community, and Carla already presented them. So, Alan, can you please start the presentation, please? Adam?
Probably muted too.
Gisela, can you just clarify how to unmute and mute the line? I think I had the same problem like Alan.
Okay, we're going to check Alan's line now. It's star 7 to unmute. Alan is not muted.
Can you hear me? I just unmuted myself. Am I on now?
Hi. Yes,
okay.
You're on, Alan. Go ahead.
Okay, someone must have muted me along the way. I think I have control of your slides. In any case, we're on number 2 now. And I do have control, I'll be moving them as I go along. One of our first tasks within the working group, it was one on term. Well, not one of the first class, but it kept on coming up, was one on terminology. We kept on confusing ourselves in terms of when we talked about things like applicant, is it applicant for the GTLD, is it applicant for the for support? And we came up with a number of clarifications as to what we meant, and I believe we have been consistent in the end in using these. So the program itself is the Developing Economy Support Program. There will be a review panel that will be making the judgment calls on whether an applicant can get support, the Support Applicant Review Panel. There is a number of criteria, the support eligibility criteria, and the support evaluation process, which describes the overall process. We are calling people who are asking for support, support candidates. Those who are approved are approved support candidates, support approved candidates, and in an ongoing process, they are the support recipient. So we're trying to differentiate carefully from applicants to the process, to the GTLD process, and applicants to the support process that we're calling candidates. I'm afraid we'll probably slip in the presentation as we go along, but that's the intent is to use that terminology. A little bit of history. As Carlton said, this has been going on for a while. The policy that came out of the The GNSO said, among other things, that all fees did not have to be the same, and in particular, least developed countries could be eligible for reduced fees. In March 2010, the board, for the first time, made a statement related to use of to applications from developing economies, and said that advocated that we should develop a sustainable approach to supporting these applicants to allow a more level playing field. February of this year, the GAC, in their scorecard in the negotiations. Sorry, is someone trying to talk to me?
No, go ahead, Alan.
Okay.
Don't make
sense. In the GAC scorecard, they made a strong statement saying they support the concept of fee reductions, and there has been further action since then that we'll talk about as we go along. The timeline describes that, and it shows, among other things, that we've been going through this process for almost, getting on a year and a half now. Carlton said this dates back to 2008, as the previous slide showed, that there was the GNSO report in 2008. However, the actual discussions on whether we should be treating applications from developing countries differently predates that very significantly. I know I started in early 2007, and it was an issue on the table at that point. Not one with a lot of positive answers to it, but nevertheless, it's been around for quite a while now. So it isn't an idea that just came about, but unfortunately, from the point of view of some of us, it was just relatively recently that there's been a more general agreement that this is a good thing. So we go through from the you know, looking at the history of the formal jazz working group itself, it was created as a result of the board resolution in Nairobi. We have issued two milestone reports. If we go on at the beginning of 2011, those of you who are involved may remember that following the first milestone report, there was a decision to recharter this group to essentially to be able to respond to the particular issues raised in the board resolutions towards the end of last year. It was a rather tumultuous time because we ended up with two different charters from the GNSO and the ALAC. They were eventually reconciled, so they were still two different ones, but matched each other relatively well. And there was a lot of concern in the community that a working group that had two charters simply could not function. I think we've proven that that's not the case. And it has not proven to be an impediment, which is, I guess, an interesting lesson learned. As you know, we issued a second milestone report prior to Singapore, and since then we have been working rather furiously to try to put together a final report, which, although it doesn't address all of the issues, it addresses most of them and provides some guidelines for how to address the other issues. I can't refer to the timeline without making a mention to staff. We've had support from Carla Valenti since the start of this work group, and in the last few months, a whole bunch of people were added, Rob Hogarth and Seth Green to do the drafting of the final report, and a number of other staff people getting involved to really change the nature of this group to allow us to spend our time focusing on the issues instead of on drafting words. And I think we all owe some thanks to ICANN staff for making sure that that has happened in a timely manner and has allowed us to produce a report that I think merits good consideration. Thank you. All right. The final milestone report asked a number of questions, or said it was addressing a number of questions. When should support be provided? Who should receive it? How should the applicants for the support, the candidates, be evaluated? What kind of support should be offered? How does the whole process work, and how does it interact with the applicant guidebook process? So this was some very meaty questions. We knew we were going into the process late, and we were not going to be able to change the overall application process. Some of us felt that if this had been addressed much earlier, it could have been built into the process in a much more logical way, but that isn't the case, and there's certainly a desire in the community that we not delay the overall application process to enable us to bring the more disadvantaged applicants into it. So it's been an interesting challenge. How do we do this kind of thing and still stay within the time frame and the rules of the overall applicant process? All right. One of the first questions, obviously, is when should the support be offered? And we believe that the full array of support, to the extent that we can pull it together in the time frame we're talking about, should be offered to the first round of candidates. There has been much discussion in the community on why can't we simply wait for the second round? Why do we have to do this now? And I think to those of us who believe in what we're doing, and there are many, the answer is really intuitive. We don't know if there's going to be a second round. We hope there might be. We don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know what the price is. And therefore, if we want the GTLD, the new GTLD world, to be inclusive, there is no choice but to make sure that the advantages that we want to offer disadvantaged people are provided for the very first round. there's just no way that we can wait for something that may or may not happen in the future. And this is particularly true for IDN-TLDs, where it is very clear that there's a huge gap to make up for the, you know, depending on how you calculate it, 20 years of Internet that is operated only in Roman script. I have who qualifies, and now I have a blank screen. Carla, do you know what happened to this slide? I have slide 9, which is empty now. There used to be some very nice circles on it, but they don't seem to have come across in the public one.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened.
All right, just imagine that we have one circle and 5 ovals around it. Let me go to my version, which I can read, and we'll come back. Oh, dear. And you have to believe this was all tested last week. All right. We are looking at a number of different entities that we believe should be eligible for support. The first one is GTLDs that are going to be either working in distinct cultural, linguistic, or ethnic communities, working with, and they're supported by them. So something akin to the, I think .cat is the one that's always used as an example, that is supporting specific communities, communities that without this level of support will probably not have their own web presence in the form of a TLD. We are looking for TLDs that may be, I'll use the term that we don't use in the report, but it's a simple one for speaking, that are sponsored by nonprofit, civil society, non-governmental type organizations that have a specific social mission, social service mission to achieve. Now, we don't use the term sponsored because that gets confusing with the sponsored TLDs of previous rounds, but we're essentially saying ones that are advocated for by parts of the community. We are looking for operations in emerging nations, emerging markets, and particularly ones which will have a real social benefit. We are focusing very much on the outcomes of the introduction of these new TLDs, and feel that the applicant must be able to demonstrate ahead of time that there is going to be some real benefit. We are not ruling out for-profit ones, but we're looking for ones, again, that will have real social benefit and hopefully demonstrable in specific geographic or cultural areas. And as implied in some of the other ones, we are very much looking for service in underserved languages and underserved scripts, areas where without the TLD support, you're asking people to operate in languages and scripts that are not their own, and that is surely going to be an impediment to spread of the Internet in those countries. We've identified a number of areas that we believe should not receive support. The first one, and we've had a lot of trouble coming up with the right words for this, and actually the words in the report ended up being not quite accurate, but the intent of it, and we will make sure the words are adjusted to make sure that they reflect it, is that we're not trying to create support for what is generically called a .brand TLD. So if the TLD is mainly aimed at a commercial enterprise, then, creating its own area on the Internet, so to speak, then we are not looking at supporting those. The concept of trademarked is one of the issues we looked at. Of course, many nonprofit organizations have trademarks, so we, as I said, we're still struggling for the exact set of words. But conceptually, we're looking at words that say we are not supporting dot brand type GTLDs. The work group came to a decision that we would not support governmental, either wholly or partially owned TLDs. The rationale was largely that it's immensely difficult to recognize poverty when we're talking about things like national governments. No matter how poor they are, they still have lots of money, and it's really a matter of priorities. There was strong pushback from the GAC, and in the statement that ended up being endorsed by the at-large advisory committee and the governmental advisory committee, they advocated that we allow government organizations to request them, with the exception of national governments. I think there's general agreement or acceptance in the working group on this, but we have not been able to come up with specific language. The GAC has offered to work with us in the next few weeks to continue this and to come up with language which will address their needs and be acceptable to the rest of the community, and we're still working on that. But so this report does still exclude governments, but with the intention of trying to fix that problem. We excluded geographic names, and to be honest, I don't really remember the details. Maybe someone else during the question period can fill us in. I think one of the issues is it was something that was just too wide a field to try to get into at this point. One of the things we understood as we were going through this is we can't meet all needs, certainly in this round. There are going to be far more needs that are real, but are going to open the scope so wide that we will not be able to do anything really beneficial if we have the scope too wide. And we excluded a number of groups that probably would be excluded under the applicant guidebook rules, but since we are recommending that this process start before the evaluation of the applicant guidebook, the evaluation called for in the applicant guidebook, that we needed to specify them ourselves. So, service in the public interest is really a large part of our focus. When we started this process, much of the discussion was on what are the criteria and qualifications for the applicant to deserve support. And we quickly moved around to realize that no matter how deserving an applicant might be of support, if they don't have a good idea, if they're not planning to do something which we consider worthy of our support, then we don't want to support them. So we did a shift from the first milestone to the second, which added in and put actually in first place the need to have something in the public interest, or we should not be supporting it in this type of round. That clearly is a very subjective thing. We understand the difficulty of making it subjective, but we couldn't see any way of advocating that ICANN put its resources and the community add other resources into it if we could not make the case that this was a deserving project that we should help happen. And again, we're looking at cultural linguistic communities, we're looking at underserved languages, some sort of social benefit, a focus on nonprofit and non-governmental organizations, but not necessarily limited to those, and operations by local entrepreneurs who we believe with some assistance can create a viable operation and significantly augment the services available in their communities. Okay, onto some of the meat. The GAC and the ALAC, in their advice, recommended a reduction of the fee from $185,000 to $47,000, which is roughly a three-quarter reduction. We had been talking about a number very similar to that, and we decided that we might as well adopt their specific number, and that's what we've done. It's important to note that this is a fee reduction. This is not designed to be one of the things that is done with the $2 million the board has allocated, plus whatever we can get from the community to match it. This is something that's completely separate. We are also advocating a staggering of fees. If you'll remember in the original process, if an applicant was not successful and left the process early, they would get a refund. We have been advocating since the start that for disadvantaged applicants, that they be allowed to put money in stages corresponding to the tiers that apply to the refunds. So essentially, it's just-in-time payment instead of a lump sum up front. The staggered fees is not as important with the fee reduction, but we still believe it's one of the parts in the toolkit that should be provided. And, of course, should the board choose to completely ignore the GAC, the ALAC, and the working group advice, and not reduce the fees, then the staggered fees become absolutely mandatory. But we believe that they are relevant even in the case of the reduced fee. The continuity instrument, that is, what happens if the registry is failing, has been subject of much discussion, and we believe that what is asked for in the applicant guidebook is just too onerous, perhaps for many GTLDs, even not supported ones, but certainly for supported ones. And for a whole host of reasons, we believe that needs to be adjusted. And lastly, we believe that there is the need for a separate fund. We've been talking about a foundation, but there's obviously other ways of implementing it that needs to be created to support this process on the long term and, of course, other things in ICANN's interest. Oops. To focus just for a minute on the fee reduction issue, the GNSO in its original report had two guidelines. There was guideline B, and it's echoed here, saying the process must be cost recovery, the operational process to allocate new GTLDs, but that does not mean that the fees have to be the same for everyone. And guideline N for Norman, which was mentioned at the beginning, which points out that in specific, those for developing nations, those for developing economies, could be priced differently. We understand that from an ICANN point of view, this is a cost recovery operation that was one of the specific guidelines, and we cannot violate that. And we do provide some methodology and some rationale for how the fees can be reduced for our supported applicants without endangering that cost recovery principle. And essentially, we are saying that one of the things that might be sacrificed is the immediate payback to reserve of the sunk costs. Now, ever since the budget was first produced for the new TLDs, there's been debate in the community whether it is reasonable for ICANN to have asked to repay the sunk costs or not. And in fact, ICANN itself changed the principle a bit. When the costs went up above what they were originally predicted, the decision was to defer some of the repayment to future rounds instead of just the first round. And so we feel that the board has already made decisions that allow more flexibility on the repayment of the sunk costs than on the cost recovery of the actual operational costs during the process.
And as I said, we have gone into a fair amount of detail on how one could reduce the cost to $47,000 without endangering the operational payback of this process. And I think this was my last slide, and I now turn it over to Avery.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, I just finished typing some answers to Jeff on the...
Oh, sorry. I haven't been paying attention to that at all.
Right,
I'll go back
not,
and read that now.
Right, because obviously you aren't. Okay, thank you, Al. Okay, so I'm now on slide 14. Thinking more about financial support, and please tell me if I speak too quickly, which is a natural tendency of mine, or if I start to fade into quietness. The financial support is basically something that needs to be seeded by the $2 million that was allocated by the board, and then funds to be solicited from other possible donors, and during the course of the working group, various members have reached out to various possible donors and gotten a fair number of indications that if there was a well-run fund and a proper means of allocating these funds, etc., that, yes, there may be interest in actually adding to a fund yet to be determined that was seeded by the board's $2 million. So basically, the working group has suggested to request of the board that they institute a committee, a board-level committee, including members of the rest of the community, to look at the creation of a foundation that would be able to collect and distribute financial support. In doing this, the working group was well aware that there may be other uses for funding that a foundation could distribute. We were only asking for the foundation to set up a fund related to the support of applicants from developing economies, but we realized that there was community. So that's why, in a sense, this need was basically made as a request to the board to look into the foundation. One of the things that was also put in the report that any financial aid that was received from a fund would be something that would need to be paid back in the event that the developing economy effort ended up profitable. And exactly how that would work out is something that, you know, the foundation would need to figure out in terms of what were the right legal instruments and ways of expressing that to someone that it decided to fund. So the foundation that we are requesting the board consider, basically the planning committee that we've requested they form would have several tasks. The first one, okay, I understand that I am speaking lowly, I will try to speak louder. That first of all, that this committee work with ICANN to investigate and understand the right way to do that, given ICANN's existence as a California 501c corporation. We understand there have been many times that this has been spoken of. There have been questions raised as to whether it was possible for ICANN to do this and what the legal ramifications, structures, constraints, etc. would be. So therefore, the first task would be to find out what was possible and under what constraints would such an entity need to operate. it would then need to define how it raised money, how it operated, what the investment guidelines would be, how it would do fundraising, how it would do grant making. This planning committee would suggest a membership for the first board of the foundation and clarify, as required by law and ICANN policy, what the relationship would be between the foundation and ICANN's corporate structure. And then it would start fundraising and basically obtaining pledges for funding of the foundation to augment the $2 million already committed by the board. The working group was open on where such a foundation would be domiciled, while first thoughts were, of course, it had to be in California. There were then other thoughts that said, is that necessary? Is that required by California law? And if it is not, then consideration should be given to locating such a foundation in places other than the United States, if that was reasonable and feasible, but it's a question they should look at. Funding sources. Slide 16 for anybody that's following separately. So the first is the board allocation from ICANN, including the $2 million already committed. Then there's solicitation of funds to at least match the initial allocation made by the ICANN board. There's a recommendation that auction proceeds beyond the cost of running auctions and beyond the cost of repaying the funds that were used to cover the fee reductions, if that method is chosen, would be perhaps allocated to this foundation. There's a hope of voluntary allocation of funds from CCCLD funds. Several members of the working group have spoken to various CCTLDs who have indicated a possible interest, assuming there was a well-run fund and a method of making sure that the grants were appropriate. Various allocations of funds from incumbent GTLDs, registries, and registrars, should they be willing to help in this. Certainly a solicitation is recommended to the GTLDs. External funding sources, people have gone and talked from the World Bank to other, although one is uncertain about the future of the World Bank, but and other funding agencies to gauge their interest. And there is an interest, there's also caution in terms of how a fund or a foundation would work. And then other sources yet to be determined by people who are experienced at fundraising. So the use of funds. Part of them is one possible application, and these are just possible applications, understanding that we're making a recommendation to consider these things, both to our chartering organizations, but beyond that to the possible creation of the board planning committee, would be application assistance beyond the JAS working group's recommended reductions in fees. It would be to help in relaxing or deferring or perhaps paying some of the upfront costs of the continuity instrument, and perhaps especially if the registry stakeholder group proposal was successful and there was the opportunity to buy into such a insurance or you know, deferment thing, perhaps in raising those funds. The possible creation of this development fund. Then one of the things that was discussed was other proposals that people might want to bring that would be means by which developing economy applicants could be helped. For example, if there was a group either including an applicant for aid or perhaps just another set of regional players who wished to try and start a registry service provider to aid and be the support for local support approved candidates or support recipients, and they came with a well-thought-out proposal for use of some funds to build such a non-profit, perhaps, enterprise to assist these applicants. That's the kind of thing that this foundation could consider. And also use to overcome technical requirement gaps, whether it's the provision of, you know, proper tunnels for meeting the IPv6 requirements or other technical requirements that required a certain amount of funding beyond the application for an applicant that wanted perhaps to create their own registry service within their registry as a local enterprise to be able to bring that capacity to a region. So basically there was not a predetermination of what could be applied for in terms of funds from the foundation, but it was a list of, these are examples of the sorts of things that this working group thinks might be useful. We also, as a working group, looked at non-financial support. And the types of non-financial support, again, were a list of possibilities. They weren't requirements. They weren't, it wasn't meant to be exhaustive. But certainly assistance with the preparation of applications. Any of us that have looked at the applications know that even once you get by the language barrier, there's an incredible amount of assistance that newcomers to the ICANN world need. There's facilitation in IPv6 compliance, which may be the running of a best effort tunnel or may just be explanation of how to go about getting an address allocation from their service provider, you know, the local IR, local internet registry, or other things that they would need help for. There's consulting and education regarding the DNSSEC implementation requirements. There's outreach and education efforts requiring just anything to do with a new GTLD program. Again, any of us that have been following all the way through know how incredibly complex it is, even for those of us that are well-trained in ICANN's ways. Logistical, translation, technical support of any variety, and again, assistance in establishment of registry service providers in regions where none or few exist. And this could extend to things like free and open source software, FOSS software systems. It could extend to other kinds of direct consultation on how to build a registry service provider for someone that has found the funding and the staffing to be able to do so and thus be able to not only bring registries to developing economies, but actually bring the technical capabilities and capacities of a back-end registry service provider to those areas. ICANN was asked to serve as a facilitator for this non-financial support by providing what is essentially a clearinghouse function. It may be a wiki plus a little bit more than that, but essentially to assist the support-approved candidates and the third-party donors, assisters, consultants, what have you, in finding each other and sort of a matchmaker, as it were, but not actually be involved in the providing of help once someone with need was paired with someone with capability, how they did that, when they did that, et cetera, would be something that ICANN would not need to maintain a presence or activity in. It's really the initial matchmaking to make sure they can find each other. They have a way of finding each other. So the eligibility requirements, specific support eligibility requirements, Alan talked largely about those. They include the specific service to the public interest, and this goes sort of beyond the general notion of public interest that has been creeping into the requirements for new GTLDs, you know, where many things can be. This is specific to the list that Alan gave in terms of those points of linguistic, of NGO-recommended activities, of support for those kinds of things. Also, they needed to suggest to have a level of financial need and of financial capability. There was certainly a concern within the working group, both for people not being able to pay the high level of ICANN fees, levels that were appropriate perhaps for developed countries, but were beyond the pale for developing economies, but also, though, that they needed to have some financial capacity and some financial capability to bear some of the costs to be able to deal with the expenses on an ongoing level. So there was that balancing. There were also various criteria to develop to disqualify, but Alan already talked about those, so this part of the slide sort of duplicates. But again, reiterating that difficulty that there is with sort of saying there's a general guideline against the DOT brand, yet those who are evaluating should be aware that just because the name of a community may be trademarked or the name of an NGO may be trademarked or the name of, you know, some other entity may be trademarked, that doesn't necessarily mean that the application is intended as a commercial supporting dot brand application. So that was part of that. Going on slide 20, the information and documentation required. So all candidates for support would be required to provide self-declarations stating that they are eligible. So first they have to basically say, this is eligible, and then they have to show why. And that can be supported in any number of ways. One of the realizations here is that in a cross-cultural environment, the necessary pieces of paperwork that are available to people from one country or people from another country may vary. So again, these are guidelines. It's annual reports or the equivalent. One of the things that was requested is evidence of previously funded projects showing degree of success in meeting goals of the project. That's part of the whole notion that if aid is going to be given, it should be given not only to someone who needs it, not only to doing someone who's supporting a cause that is in the public interest, but is someone who has a track record of doing things, of taking funding from fund-granting institutions and doing the right thing with them. Financial reports showing the need, you know, and that may be budgets, that may be letters from, you know, financial institutions. Again, that's a requirement that might be fulfilled in a number of ways. Letters of reference regarding candidates' ability to perform to form a sustainable operation. Do people that know them believe that this is possible? And especially if those letters can come from agencies that have some experience in understanding what it takes to create a sustainable operation in the areas in which these people are located, that helps, again, those who are evaluating understand, is this an appropriate risk? Is this a risk that has a chance of succeeding? And then documentation showing evidence of all the other qualifying circumstances. Again, understanding that there is no fixed set of things that would globally be available and such. Okay, support evaluation process at a glance. The working group is recommending that this process take place before the standard GTLD application review, which includes starting very soon and proceeding until the applications are being reviewed by ICANN. Each support application should be evaluated by the support application review panel. For those in ICANN that love new acronyms, we have created a few more. This is the SARP that Alan referred to earlier. The SARP should be composed of volunteers from the ICANN community and outside experts. All knowledge with existing new GTLD processes, potential gaming patterns, and the general needs and capabilities of support candidates from developing economies. We did not go deeper on what all of those qualifications would be, but did lay out a list of several that we thought of. Also, there's recommended that this group have the ability to reach out to other experts when and as necessary. When the SARP rejects a support candidate, the SARP should explain its reasons. This is just general good policy that is becoming more and more the case within the ICANN environment. The support candidate may then work to improve its application and reapply for support if indeed there is time to do so. And of course, I mean, perhaps this went without saying, but should they be able to find the assistance elsewhere, and, you know, for example, I do know of a couple nationally related support programs that are being considered where they may support an application from their region. If they can find support elsewhere or can find an investor or what have you, then there's certainly no block on them applying under the regular procedure as anyone else would. The expectation is that if they don't get support from the ICANN-initiated support program or some other support program, that is probably not going to happen. The support candidates are still responsible for paying the TAS 5,000 application deposit to enter the application process as all applicants. Again, this is within the sort of spirit of you have to have some financial capability and you need to at least be able to come up with that in order to follow through with this process. And that the ICANN staff should produce a guide on the candidate support process. And this is very much seen as a way to get ICANN's assistance in fleshing out all of the issues in a very deployable method. The working group is making a set of recommendations to its chartering organization. We hope that they make a further recommendation to the board that these be looked at, you know, that these be approved, but also that these be looked at by the ICANN staff, and that the means and the details of implementation. We have seen what, you know, experience the ICANN staff has gained from the days of the GNSO's recommendations and moving them to implementation, that we realize that we are not the implementers. ICANN staff are the experienced implementers who understand how this can be done. And in fact, they have been working with the JAS working group very much in the way that they worked with the GNSO towards the end of the GNSO process, looking at what we were suggesting and asking us questions about, do you mean this, do you mean that, from their implementation savvy perspective. Okay, next slide. That is a picture of the support evaluation process with application for support, review and decision, award, support approved, and evaluation. I'm glad this picture came out so that I don't have to try and ask you to picture it, as Alan was unfortunately forced to do. And I don't think I will try to talk through all these boxes yet, I mean, at this point, but it basically takes this and breaks it down further. This process has gotten to this point based on an initial flow diagram produced by members of the working group, and then the staff did take it and, you know, looked at the process, and as mentioned when I was speaking of the previous slide, did make recommendations on what made sense. And I'm not at all trying to say that this has been endorsed by anyone. It is still very much a work in progress, but it is an attempt to try and start working out the details of the process in greater details, in greater detail, yes, but basically in greater detail. Moving on. So the next step is the GNSO and ALAC, our chartering organizations, need to consider this. We have every hope that they then pass it on to the board with their approval, with their request for it to follow on to implementation, et cetera. As was mentioned, the final report is being translated into the 6 UN languages. The working group, one of the things that's not on here is the working group, because of the speed with which it did things, is still working on its response document to all the community comments that were received, received on the period, the previous milestone report, and is, you know, that will be coming out shortly, and also is standing by, ready to assist in interpretation, to work with staff and implementation if that is something that the chartering bodies believe is a reasonable thing for the group to do. Those are the next steps. And that's where to find more info. And then I guess we're at the questions. And I guess, Carla, will you be the question monitor? Is that how it will work? Are you on mute, Carla?
Hi, sorry, I'm on mute. Gisela, can we open the channel for English questions? Or questions in English?
Sure, Carla.
There have also been some in the chat. I haven't looked at them, but perhaps while people are getting ready, those can be looked at.
Yes.
Jeff, are you in a talking? I see you've had quite a few, and I wonder if you're on a line for speaking, whether you would like to speak yours or should somebody read them out, and I'm not sure which parts are questions and which parts are discussion. He's typing. I don't see any hands raised up. I suppose one way to start this until and such is certainly with people who are in the Adobe room, the whole mechanism of people raising their hands and asking questions in you know, first come, first serve order is certainly available. And that question can either be spoken or can be typed. So if there are questions, that's one way to go about it. It certainly can't be clear enough that no one has questions.
It's Alan here. Jeff has a question on the chat, which he asked someone to read, and I'll do that. Does the Jazz Working Group envision all of this be completed prior to January 12th, or can it be run in parallel for just a bit so it ends prior to the new GTLD application window closes to give time to successful financial applicants to get their application in prior to the 12th?
Sorry, Aubrey. Gisela, I think the interpreter may just need a couple of seconds to actually translate that.
Okay. Let me know when it's safe.
Seem to have Morse code on the line.
Why are we getting the interpreters? Is there any other questions from the chat, Avery? So, for example, Jeff Newman asks, if the $2 million does not go towards the fee reduction, how will the evaluators get paid? Or is it assumed that the $47K is enough to pay for all of the evaluators?
Okay, I'm willing to give answers to those when it's considered appropriate to do so with the translation. I can't put it that way. Let me try the first one, and Alan can certainly kick in on any of the ones he wants to. In terms of the first question, I've actually been searching through the document. In terms of what shows up in the slides, with them basically saying that the application support review continues until application review begins. Now, I need to confirm that within the report, but if that's the case, then I believe that the question is answered positively, that they would have until the review started, which would be the end of the application period. I think the working group does argue that the earlier these are done, the better, and that having approval at the beginning of the application period is preferable, but I do not see in the working group's recommendation a mandated cutoff other than, obviously, once the application period is over, approving applications for fee reduction and other things would not make sense because it would be too late. In terms of the second question to do with how do they get paid, no, we are not saying that the $47,000 is enough for the evaluation. We take ICANN staff-produced budget at its word that says that $99,000, $100,000 is what is required to fund the process. So we have produced two variations of an explanation in the report. These are around page 13, I think. Alan was basically leading one group of thought, and I was in another. But and so the notion was, though, that the 86,000% the 86,000 portion of the fee for the applicants, for the approved applicants, would be just waived, and that it didn't make sense that they pay that, and that make up the difference between the 99,000 and the 47,000 that was being charged to those applicants, that in order to keep the cash flow for the evaluators at the proper level, that money from other applicants intended for the reserve fund and the risk fund could be applied to that, those funds to be repaid later from expected auction funds. Yes, realizing that there was perhaps a risk then that the a reserve fund and the risk fund would not quite hit the levels that the ICANN staff had projected, but looking at even an optimistic number of applicant support applicants, making an argument that those reserve funds and risk funds would still have a very large, would still get very large contributions from the 86,000 that was contributed by each of the non-support applicants, of which there may be hundreds. So that was the argument that was produced in 13. You know, whether that argument is reasonable to all is another issue, but that is the argument that, one of the arguments that the working group produced. Alan, I don't know if you want to, I pretty much explained my argument, and you may want to explain yours and add to what I said. You have your hand up anyway.
Yeah. Of the questions asked, in terms of the timing, I answered in the chat, and I agree with Avery. I think it's going to come down to what the staff implementation plan says, but I think it is unreasonable to expect that the full review be done in time for the launch of the program, and clearly the results have to be out in sufficient time to give an applicant time to formally apply and to tie up all the knots on an application. So it's got to be sometime between the January and April timeframes. But I think the staff implementation plan is going to have to look at the practicalities of how can this actually be pulled off, and I think we're going to have to wait to some extent on that. In terms of the fee reduction, I tried to explain what I was looking at in my approach in the, it's in the report, but also in the chat, that essentially I'm not looking at a difference between the costs that are well known by ICANN and what were called the risk costs. Assuming that there are no more than about 20% of the applicants who are supported fully, and most of us are estimating a much lower percentage than that, then the only risk to the ICANN, to the fee reduction, is in the repayment of the sunk costs to the reserve. Now, as I mentioned, ICANN has already been soft on that in that they spread it out over a longer time because the sunk costs ended up being larger than were originally predicted when the fees were set. And if there are no auction proceeds, which some of us think is a low probability, but a possibility nonetheless, then the sunk costs might be spread out longer. If there are auction proceeds, then those auction proceeds would be used to replace the money that was not taken in directly from applicants. So we are advocating a process by which there is no risk to ICANN any larger than the risk in their own model of the 185 covering the costs. If ICANN sadly underestimated the real cost, then of course there is risk, but that doesn't, our model doesn't change it at all. So I don't know to what extent that answers the questions. Jeff asked one other question at one point of where does the money come to pay the paid evaluators, that is the advisors on, the working group is suggesting that we have a largely volunteer SARP, the applicant review panel, but that there be advisors who are paid, and I'm presuming that the only source of money, since money doesn't just come out of the air, is going to be the $2 million, perhaps augmented by whatever else ICANN can convince other people to put into the process. Thank you.
I think I have a different assumption, but that's not something that's been covered by the working group.
No.
My assumption is that that would come from the same place that was making up the difference of the funding of the application.
Okay.
That funding would need to come because the foundation wouldn't exist yet. That ICANN has a cash flow issue that maintains that anybody is paying out of money it has. Therefore, that money would have to come out in your explanation against the payback to the reserve fund as well. But of course, the working group did not determine that.
Yeah, there was also at one point a $50,000 allocated for this program. I don't know if that was replaced by the $2 million or if the $2 million was in addition to that. So there's a potential $50,000 somewhere that might also apply to that. I'm not sure.
I see Keith has his hand up.
Thank you, Aubrey. Can you all hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. Thank you. A little bit of background noise. Just a couple of comments. As the alternate chair of the registry stakeholder group, we would like to congratulate the JAS working group on really the excellent work product that you've come up with here in the final report. We spent some time late last week and over the weekend reviewing carefully the final report and coming up with a list of comments and questions that we've submitted to you. And Aubrey, I know you've seen that. I know you forwarded it to the group, but because it took place over the weekend, I'm sure that most have not had a chance to review it in any detail. But I would just simply refer to that and make a couple of specific comments. One is that, a lot of the questions and comments that we made in that document really focus on the need for a more detailed implementation plan. The broad strokes and the framework that the working group has come up with in the final report really need to be augmented by a implementation report developed by staff and the community. And we hope and request that implementation plan would be posted for public comment. So that's just a general statement. Most of the things in our document are specific to sort of implementation details, but the devil is in the details as we work through this. One of the points that we wanted to note in particular is that the working group did raise concerns about possible gaming, and that we as a stakeholder group do have concerns about the possibility of gaming support review process by potential applicants. So we just did want to call that out as well. So I won't take up any more time on this call, but we certainly as a stakeholder group look forward to working with members of the JAS working group and the ICANN staff in moving forward in terms of coming up with a more detailed implementation plan and making sure that you know, all the details have been thought through. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll start, Alan, if it's okay. I read through your comments and very much appreciated, and I don't know if you noticed, but I tried to sneak in some of the answers and some of the comments to your issues. I think you'd find complete agreement in the working group that this needs the staff detailed implementation plan, and that, yes, it should go out for community review. In terms of the gaming of the process, the group, working group, has been very aware of it. As you may have noticed, when speaking of who would be on that evaluation panel, our application review panel, one of the categories of talent was indeed to be a master gamer. There are people in ICANN who understand gaming down to the very core of their being and will recognize any game at a mere beginning of the conversation. And we think it's critical that some of that well-known talent, and I'm not going to list names in a webinar, but I think all of us within ICANN have our mental set of those who are skilled at this, but who are good ICANN stewards of the ICANN process, to get them involved and make sure that they are there to raise the alarm on anything that looks like it may conceivably, possibly be gaming, so that the rest of the review panel can look at it more deeply to determine whether it is or whether it isn't. That's the only way I can think of personally to stop gaming, is to make sure you've got a master gamer at the gate.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Aubrey, this is Carla. We will now take questions from the French channel. French channel, do we have any questions? How about the Spanish channel? The Spanish channel, do we have any questions?
Sí, dígame. Sí.
Yes. It sounded like we have a question from the Spanish channel. Is that all right?
Yes, we have someone from the Spanish channel making a comment or asking a question. Stand by. Hold on.
Okay, thank you. And Gisela Allen is...
Good morning to everyone. This is Antonio Medina from Colombia. My comment is that I think it's very opportune to have put this teleconference together. I'm not going to ask any questions because I think that the answers to questions that I might had, they were already answered. But I'm really looking forward to how this is going to proceed in the future. We're going to be on the lookout for successful completion of the CERF work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions from the Spanish channel?
I don't hear any questions.
Thank you. I think, Avery, Alan, we don't have any questions from the French and the Spanish channels. I don't see any hand raised in Adobe.
And it's exactly an hour and a half.
Right. So unless our chairs have a final word, I guess we're done.
Okay, then. So thank you, everybody, for participating in this webinar. We have another session coming up in a few hours. Thank you all.
Thank you. So anyone that thinks of a question during the day can join the later webinar and throw them in.
Can I say something?
You're the boss. Of course you can.
I will make the next panel because I have a work engagement that will take me out of the house, and I will be traveling on the road at the time. I want to thank all of you for participating and showing up. I want to thank especially Avery and Alan for leading the information flow in this seminar. Many thanks to the staff members who have been working with us to this final product. I thank you, Carl and Glenn and Gisela, Rob and Seth and Wendy. Thank you all very much for showing up. I just want to thank everybody for showing up and showing up for work on this. It's been a long, grueling process. I truly appreciate it that you have taken the time to get us to this point and producing what I consider to be a really good piece of work for the benefit of all of us. Thank you all.
It's Alan. I don't know if anyone on this call has any further questions that come up either as reading the report or reviewing the this presentation. Please, on the wiki that is on the last slide, there is a comment period, which is a good place to put a comment section, which is a good place to post questions or send them to any of the principals who have been speaking on this call, and we'll make sure that they get addressed. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.